Blog Talk Radio.
The reason politicians try so hard to get reelected is that they would hate to have to try to make a living under the laws they've passed.
You're listening to the Goldstein on Geld Show with financial expert Douglas Goldstein. This show is designed to give general information related to investing and finance. Neither Doug Goldstein, his guests, nor the radio station are rendering legal, tax, insurance, or specific financial advice. If you require such advice, contact a competent professional advisor. Before making any investment decisions based on what you heard during the show, please review the complete disclaimer located at www.goldsteinongeld.com. And now, here's your host, Money Maven Doug Goldstein.
Good Money Monday. I'm Doug Goldstein. Thanks so much for joining me today. You know, I had an interesting conversation with a client. I'd like to share it with you. The client came from an incredibly wealthy family. It was multi-generations of wealth. It had been passed down, and we were having a conference call with the lawyers and the accountants because it's a cross-border family. And frankly, these issues can be complicated. I sort of serve as the quarterback of the team. My job as a financial advisor is not necessarily to write the trust documents, because I don't do that, and I don't fill in tax returns, and I don't write the tax opinions for the client, but I help the client to bring it all together and ultimately to make the investment decisions. But one of the decisions that was neither a tax decision nor an investment decision was what the client's real goals were in terms of passing money to the next generation. So the client said, listen, I want to help my kids buy houses, and which was very nice and not a problem, and I want to help my grandchildren buy houses, and I'd like to pay for everyone's school. So that was all well and good. And then the client said that he didn't want the children to be spoiled, right? In other words, he wants them to have to do some work. And in fact, he quoted what is often attributed to Warren Buffett as saying he wants his kids to have enough money so they feel they can do anything, but not so much that they feel they can do nothing. And I think that's a great quote and is very important. So that really led to a discussion of the client with the client about what their goals are with helping their children and the next generation. And let me give you one more piece of information here, which is relevant to the puzzle, which is if a individual dies, and I'm not talking about a couple here, an individual dies with more than about $5.4 million of net worth, everything above that is taxable. It's called estate tax, and the IRS is going to come take its, I don't know if it's its fair share or not, but it's going to take about 40% of that money. So we can perhaps discuss the philosophy of whether taxing money, which has already been taxed, is a fair thing to do, but not for today. Let's talk about some practical issues of dealing with that. So if you say, by the way, if you have a couple, then they get a combined $10.8 million. So, and this number, by the way, changes every year. It gets increased by inflation. Make sure you speak with a tax advisor so you know exactly where you're holding on this. If you decide to tell your kids, listen, I'm just going to leave everything to you and we'll pay the estate tax and you'll end anyway get tens of millions of dollars. So fine, that's one decision to make. But what are they going to do with the money? First of all, they're going to have to deal with the same problem. And the lawyers do have techniques for dealing with some of this. It's called a generation skipping trust. And there are all sorts of models for dealing with it, not necessarily to eliminate it. But then I said, well, let's say that you leave the money to your children, and then they leave it to their children. What are those kids ultimately going to do with it? And it wasn't clear, and frankly, no one really knows. And I said, do you think that you would be happier today making sure your kids and grandkids are all set up and they'll be fine, and then everything above that giving it to charity? And the client said, you know something? I come from a very philanthropic family, and that's exactly what I want to do. And it turned out that other cousins and siblings in the family had also put aside their own foundations that they were actively participating in giving the money away. And giving away charity, I am a big believer that charity starts at home, but it doesn't mean that you have to make your kids so wealthy that they will never do anything. They won't add anything to society. And I'm sad to say that I've seen both types of families, and usually when kids aren't trained to handle money properly, and they're not trained about the importance of giving back to the community, they never do. And so I'd like to you know, especially for people who are in the ultra-high net worth category, but even if you're not, think about the lesson you want to give to your kids about what they should be doing with the money and what it's all about. All right, we'll be talking in just a minute, by the way, to someone who perhaps can give us a little more perspective on this. I'm going to be bringing on a woman. She's a performance coach. Her name is Lee Miltier, and she talks a little bit more about the, I would say, the spiritual side of handling money. So stay tuned just a minute. We'll be bringing her on. Now let's hear from CPA Ron Zalbin with a tax tip on the Goldstein on Geld Show.
Hi, I'm Ron Zalbin, a U.S. and Israeli CPA with the firm of Abu Lafia, Avital & Sharansky, with offices in Jerusalem and in Tel Aviv. I constantly get the question, under what circumstances do I have to file a U.S. tax return? The U.S. taxes its citizens and green carders on their worldwide income. If your worldwide income exceeds a certain amount, even if you don't owe any tax, you must file a U.S. tax return. Those thresholds are the following. If you were single and you're under age 65 for 2014, if you had over $10,150 of income for the year. If you were single and 65 and older, $11,700 of income. If you filed married filing jointly and your income was under $20,300 and you were under 65, then you do not have to file a return. If your income is above that, you do. If both spouses are 65 and older and you file married filing jointly, the threshold is $22,700. If you file married filing separately, that is that you're married to a non-American and you have no dependents that are U.S. citizens, the threshold is $3,950. If you file head of household, that means you're either unmarried with dependents or you're married to a non-American with dependents, the threshold is $13,050 if you're under age 65 and $14,600 if you're over age 65. As you can see, there are a lot of situations that depend on your filing status. In addition, under other circumstances, for example, if you have self-employment income from a business over $400, despite that the fact you might be below the threshold, you still must file a U.S. tax return. If you owe alternative minimum tax, you must file a U.S. tax return. If you received an advance payment on the premium tax payment, even though you may be under the threshold, you must file a U.S. tax return. There are many other exceptions as well. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to email me at ron@abulafia.co.il.
Thanks so much, CPA Ron Zalbin, for today's Goldstein on Geld Tax Tip. I mentioned a minute ago something called a generation-skipping trust. Let me take a moment to define it, because a lot of people do use this tool, and it can be very helpful, especially in families where there's lots and lots of money going down the line. So first of all, a generation-skipping trust, also just called a GST sometimes, it's a legally binding agreement where the grantor, meaning that the original person who sets up the trust, let's say the grandparent, instead of passing money down to his children, he passes them to his grandchildren. So he's skipping his children's generation. The money goes directly from the grandparent to the grandchild. Now, there can be a lot of conditions to this, and in fact, a generation-skipping trust could also benefit the middle generation, the child generation, during the whole process. The way that would work might be that the grandparent would say, when I die, the money should go into a generation-skipping trust, and any interest can go to my children, but the principal is all going to go to my grandchildren. So what's the benefit of this? The key benefit is, if the children never take title of the assets, then when they die, it won't be part of their estate, and they won't have to pay estate tax on it. You can imagine, if you have the grandparents leaving the money to their children and paying a 40% estate tax, and then the children leaving the money to the grandchildren with another 40% estate tax, ultimately this money is going to get depleted rather quickly. So this is one way that people can deal with skipping a generation that may not need the money. I only caution you, if you live in Israel, in fact, I caution you to make sure you get legal advice, but in particular, the taxation of trusts in Israel has gotten more complex in the very recent past, and it is possible that any of the trusts that people are using for estate planning might be, the purpose of them might be completely turned upside down by an Israeli tax rule. So if you have any of these documents set up, maybe you set them up before you came to Israel, or your parents set them up and you are part of the whole estate plan, or you're thinking of setting something like this up, make sure that you bring together your Israeli tax advisor who knows about trust taxation, as well as the U.S. estate planning team. And I work in the middle of this sometimes as a financial advisor. I'm happy to help you to coordinate it. But you got to make sure that everyone's talking, because the rules are complex in and of themselves, and they're doubly complex when you're dealing with overseas and cross-border families.
Learn to manage your money with investment advisor Doug Goldstein. Doug is the author of Building Wealth in Israel. He's an international financial planner and the host of the Goldstein on Gelt show.
Okay, we are back. I'm very happy to have on the Goldstein on Gelt show Lee Miltier, who's an internationally known entrepreneur, visionary, best-selling author. She's spoken to hundreds of thousands of people around the world, and she's the founder of the Millionaire Smart Coaching Program. Lee, a real honor to have you.
Thank you very much, Doug. I'm just excited to be here from Virginia Beach, Virginia in the USA.
Wow. So whenever someone says the word millionaire, of course, it does catch attention. Tell us, what is the Millionaire Smarts Program?
The Millionaire Smarts Program is something I do each month for primarily entrepreneurs, small business owners, people on commission, anybody who's interested in money. The truth is, to be super successful, you have to have the mindset about money. And so I cover topics that help people clear up their mindset, get very clear on their intentions, on what they want to do, use their mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, and financial energies appropriately, and basically just get in the mindset of that to be successful, it's 100% up to you.
Okay, so let's drill into this a little more, because I have a feeling it could sound funny when someone talks about the mindset of money. So tell me what you mean by that.
Well, money is something that is attracted to you or repelled from you. And the more we have a mindset of appreciation and value of money, and the more we are more free with our money and belief that we have always what it takes to make more money. In other words, no matter what happens, you land on your feet. Money is attracted to you. In other words, I always tell people, scan the landscape of your reality, and there is always ideas and ways to make money. I mean, I can walk into a business. I can look at anything and see it ways to make money, because I have trained my mind to see opportunities. And then once you see them, evaluate, are those opportunities really valuable for my own skills, my ability, my talents, and my resources? And is it something I'm truly interested in? And a lot of people go for money for just greed. And the problem with that is you'll end up doing things that you hate. And then money is repelled from you, because you have to actually love what you do, appreciate what you do, and appreciate the actual energy, because money is an energy currency. And you have to appreciate that, and you have to nourish it. So I provide people each month with information on how to do that. And I will tell you, with no bragging aside, I am a farmer's daughter with no assistance whatsoever. And I am a self-made multimillionaire because of being able to see opportunities, take action on the opportunities, and then leverage those opportunities.
Lee, you're talking about the fact that people often can find an idea or an entrepreneurial idea, but frankly, my experience has been that there are some people who seem to have it and some people who don't have it. I, like you, I guess, I've started a number of businesses, and I'm constantly coming up with new ideas, and yet I'll tell them to other people, and I get this like blank stare as if they have no idea what I'm talking about. Do you think there are those people who are naturally entrepreneurs and those people who just never can be?
Doug, I believe a lot has to do with your upbringing. For example, people who grow up in families where the word security is very important, like they have the 9-to-5 job and then the mom and dad come home and, you know, they're very dependent on external sources. I believe that most entrepreneurs are made. I think a few are born, but it's like leadership. Most people are made, and it's a choice. I grew up on a farm ranch, and Those people are automatic entrepreneurs. We just do whatever it takes, that you have to literally kind of create money out of thin air because you're thinking, okay, what do I do to make money? And I think that if people want to be more entrepreneurial, they have to start scanning the landscape of their reality and ask themselves this question. What new thing could be birthed from this existing thing? How could you take something existing? Because entrepreneurs don't feel the need to invent things. They feel the need to take an existing thing and make it better. So they're actually improvers and then great marketers. And they also have this very optimistic attitude of, I can do it. It'll be fun. It's very exciting to, you know, to be challenged. They are not concerned with security, not that they don't want to make money and a lot of it, but they're really wired for challenges, whereas some people are very wired for, I want to be taken care of, I want security, I want the comfort of knowing every single week there's going to be a paycheck. And as an entrepreneur, you never have that security. To give you the truth answer, I think most people are really formed as entrepreneurs, as young children, by the environment that they're in. There are some exceptions to that, but the most successful entrepreneurs I know really grew up seeing other entrepreneurs. And the joke that we all have is we're unemployable, meaning even if we did get a job, we won't do very well at it because we'll take over, we'll be bossy, we'll be fixing everything in a week.
That's definitely a problem we've seen. We're talking with Lee Meltier, who's an expert on entrepreneurship. She's also been not only advising groups, but she advises individuals on how to build up their business. She created the Millionaire Smarts coaching system. And one of the things, Lee, that I think that you're kind of known for is helping people to make decisions. So when someone needs to make a decision, maybe that's not so easy, how do you help them along?
Well, I believe that decisions should have two parts, and the first part is your logical left brain part. So you do the old make a list of here are the positive aspects of this decision and here are the negative aspects. And you always ask yourself this question, you know, if this went belly up, will I be able to live? Will I still be able to eat that thing? But the other part that most people do not add to this decision-making process is your own intuition, that gut feeling. Your belly has more wiring and nerve centers than any other part of your body, and it is connected to an intelligence that you may or may not be aware of. And the truth is that we have this instinct, and if we listen to our instincts about this feels right, then we should definitely make our decisions with that in mind. If you get that no feeling, like, you know, no way does this feel right to me, you should definitely listen to that. So every person listening today has either hired someone or done something where their gut told them not to do it, and they always regretted not listening to the gut. I'm a believer in what I call left brain, right brain decision making. So I look at all the facts and figures, but my final decision will really come from, does this feel right for me? And I've done a lot of programs on intuition, and I will tell you, I do believe it's the new common sense for today's world. Because, Doug, you interview a lot of people. There are a ton of false prophets in the world, particularly financial false prophets. And when you're talking to one of those people, you really have to be accessing that inner part of, is this person actually telling me the truth?
Right. And I
then
think
check
critical.
Up on it.
Yeah, critical to be able to ask that question. Lee, we're nearing the end of our time, but I know you're coming out with a new book in just a few weeks. Can you tell us in one or two sentences what's that about? And then let us know how people can follow you and follow your work.
The new book is going to be called Reclaim the Magic, How to Manifest Anything You Want. And I talk a lot in this book about intuition. And if you wish to follow me, I have a wonderful website that there's a lot of free information on. And it's just miltier.com. And that's MILTEER. And my first name is LEE. And so you can Google me, but I have 2 free weekly e-zines that go out and lots of free information. And if you come check me out, I promise you it'll be worth your while.
All right. We will put a link to that at the show notes of today's show at GoldsteinOnGelt.com. Lee, listen, good luck on the new book, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Doug.
Goldstein on Gelt will teach you everything you need to know. From a certified financial planner, you'll get great tips on the show. For financial advice, Doug Goldstein is your guy. It's Goldstein on Gelt. Yeah, Goldstein on Gelt.
The original story I told on today's show was of an ultra-high-net-worth family dealing with some estate planning issues, and we spoke about generation-skipping trusts. But let me just comment that it's not necessarily only for ultra-wealthy people. Let's look at another example of where someone might want to use a generation-skipping trust. Let's say a child in the second generation. So again, we're talking about the grandparents, the children, and the grandchildren. So the child at that level gets divorced, terrible divorce. If the money that came from his parents is in a generation-skipping trust, those assets don't belong to the divorcing spouse. So his ex-spouse has no legal claim on them whatsoever. So it's a great way to protect a family in the event of divorce. It may not only be divorce, by the way. Let's say that someone signs as a guarantor to a loan or for a company, or his friend is buying a house and the child signs on as a guarantor of the mortgage, and things don't work out. So the guarantor of a mortgage or of a company or of a loan is called upon to pay that loan. That's what it means to guarantee a loan. And normally his assets could be attached in order to pay whatever he guaranteed. But if the assets are actually not in his name and they're in a generation skipping trust, that would protect those assets. And again, this goes on and on. If there is some other large financial catastrophe, if someone's a gambler or has drug problems or has a car accident or some sort of accident and there's no insurance to cover it, the creditor can get the person, meaning the person to whom the child owes money, can bankrupt the child but cannot go directly after the assets in the trust, the generation skipping trust, because they're not the assets of the child. It's something to consider if you, first of all, no one knows what's going to happen, but if you are looking for ways of protecting your wealth from generation to generation, make sure you speak to your lawyer about a generation skipping trust.
You're listening to Money Maven Doug Goldstein on the Goldstein on Gelt Show. Stay tuned for the second half of the show right after the break.